For a lot of business leaders, the very phrase cloud migration triggers a very specific, deeply ingrained kind of anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. It's universally dreaded.
Right. And today, we are pulling out the core insights from a really fantastic guide by Technigen. Our mission for this audio overview is pretty simple, honestly. We're figuring out how to swap the engine out of your business while the car is still driving down the 405 freeway.
That is a great way to put it.
Because for an organization in Orange County, or really anywhere in Southern California, that is essentially what a cloud migration feels like.
Mm.
You know, you're being asked to replace the fundamental infrastructure of your operations without missing a single beat.
And honestly, that anxiety is entirely justified when you look at how these projects have historically been handled.
Yeah, the horror stories.
Exactly. The fear of business interruption is massive because, well, the consequences are massive. But the premise of Technigen's guide, Cloud Migration Services Without Business Downtime, is that business interruption is not an inherent feature of moving to the cloud.
Right. It's not guaranteed.
No, not at all. It is usually just the symptom of an incomplete roadmap. So we are going to unpack how you structure this work around continuity. We'll cover everything from the initial workload inventory to downtime prevention, security, and that crucial post-migration governance that keeps costs from spiraling.
I always think of a haphazard migration like the kind done without that solid roadmap we just mentioned, like packing for a move by blindly throwing everything you own into random cardboard boxes.
Oh, man, yeah. Just sweeping the counter into a box.
Literally, you're tossing in your blender, your tax documents, a half-eaten bag of chips. You just tape it up and hope for the best.
Which is a disaster waiting to happen.
Exactly. To actually succeed, you need to know exactly what you are packing, why it's moving, and where it is going to live in the new environment. And I think that starts with defining a clear business outcome. You can't just move for the sake of buying into new technology.
Right, and that's a common trap. People treat migration as a purely technological exercise rather than, you know, a business evolution. Technology serves the business, not the other way around. If leadership hasn't stepped up to define what success actually looks like, the technical team is flying blind.
They're just guessing.
Exactly. Like, are you moving to better support a hybrid workforce? Are you trying to improve system availability because your on-premise servers keep going down? Or are you replacing aging infrastructure that has become a severe liability?
And defining the success isn't just about broad goals, right? It's about setting hard metrics.
Yes.
For instance, determining that success means remote employees can access the main database 20% faster. Or that you have a tested, reliable recovery system that can restore operations in under an hour.
The metrics are non-negotiable.
Right. And part of that definition process means leadership has to document how much downtime each critical process can actually tolerate. Because if you don't know the limits of what the business can handle, you cannot build a safe transition plan.
Which leads directly into figuring out what exactly is in those moving boxes.
The workload inventory.
The workload inventory, yes. This is the foundational step that dictates the success or failure of the entire endeavor. Before a single byte of data moves across the network, you have to map every single asset.
Meaning servers, applications, databases.
All of it. File stores, all of the third-party tools connecting to them. But mapping the individual assets is really only half the job.
Right. Because of the dependencies.
Exactly. The critical mechanism here is mapping the dependencies between them.
Dependencies are like the hidden strings attached to everything. I mean, I've heard horror stories of companies moving this shiny cloud-ready application only to realize on launch day that it relies on a legacy authentication server sitting in a closet in their Irvine office.
Those are the exact disasters a deep inventory prevents. You know, you might have an app that looks perfectly modern, but its backend pulls data from an older local database through a hard-coded IP address.
Oh, wow.
So if you move the app without moving the database or without updating how they talk to each other, the app breaks the moment it hits the cloud.
Just instant failure.
Right. So by mapping those relationships early, you know, often using automated discovery tools that monitor network traffic to see what systems are quietly talking to each other, you can sequence the migration accurately.
You move the dependent systems together.
Yes. Or you build temporary bridges between the cloud and your local office.
I've seen leaders get impatient with this mapping process, though.
Yeah.
So let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Sure.
Isn't it incredibly tempting to just lift and shift everything at once, you know, just drag and drop all your servers into a cloud environment and rip the Band-Aid off over a single weekend.
Oh, it is the most tempting approach. And honestly, statistically, one of the most dangerous.
Really?
Yeah. A pure lift and shift of an entire enterprise treats every workload as having the exact same risk profile, which is never true.
Ah, that makes sense.
Mechanically, a legacy application designed to run on a local server might consume massive amounts of unnecessary compute power when dropped into the cloud. And that leads to astronomical monthly bills.
Right, because it's not optimized for the cloud.
Exactly. This is why classifying workloads by risk and required effort is vital.
So it's about applying the right strategy to the right system. Some things are fine to lift and shift, but others need to be modernized or replatformed to actually work efficiently.
Exactly.
And honestly, some legacy systems should probably just be retired entirely. You break the migration into bite-sized pieces.
You take your low-risk internal-only systems and you use those for your early pilot phases. The IT team learns the mechanics of the new cloud environment using systems that won't halt revenue if they glitch.
That's smart.
Right. Then, armed with that experience, you approach your revenue-sensitive or heavily regulated systems with deeper testing and a very conservative phased cutover.
So you dictate the pace of the migration, rather than letting the chaos of a massive weekend-long move dictate your business operations.
Precisely.
That makes total sense. So we know what we're moving, and we know the sequence. That naturally brings us to the pathways we use to get there, the network and the gates that protect it, identity access.
The roads and the keys.
Okay, let's unpack this. I've always found that leaders underestimate the network piece.
Yeah.
I compare network readiness to trying to sip a really incredibly thick milkshake.
Okay, I like where this is going.
You might have a workload that flows perfectly through the massive wide pipes of your local in-office network. But suddenly, when you force that same massive workload through a standard internet connection to the cloud, the volume of the data hasn't changed, but the physics of the pathway force a bottleneck.
That milkshake analogy perfectly captures the mechanics of latency versus bandwidth.
Right.
Bandwidth is the width of the straw. Latency is how long the straw is.
Oh, I love that.
Cloud performance lives and dies by that connectivity. When you move an application from a server room down the hall to a data center hundreds of miles away, the data physically has to travel further.
Right, takes time.
Exactly.
Right.
If your applications require constant, rapid back and forth communication, that added latency will make the system feel incredibly slow to the user, even if you have a high bandwidth connection.
Which means you can't just look at the service agreement from your internet provider and assume you're fine.
No, definitely not.
You have to measure typical network usage and, well, more importantly, peak usage. A pipe that works perfectly fine during a Tuesday morning lull might completely buckle under the pressure of end-of-month financial reporting when everyone is on the system at once.
Assessing peak usage is non-negotiable. You are actively looking for latency spikes, packet loss, or single points of failure in your routing.
Because if your internet goes down now, everything goes down.
Right. If your entire business model relies on reaching these cloud applications, a single internet outage at your office brings everything to a halt. You will likely need secondary, redundant connectivity and documented failover procedures.
Makes sense.
Mechanically, you also have to test your firewall rules and update your DNS domain settings well in advance so traffic is routed correctly the absolute second you flip the switch.
And once the pathways are solid, we have to talk about the gates. In a local office, security is often physical. You know, you have to be in the building to access the server.
Hmm.
But in the cloud, identity is the new perimeter. It becomes the primary control plane.
It dictates everything. Because the systems are accessible from anywhere, who you are is the only thing standing between your data and the public internet.
Right.
This requires a rigorous mapping of the joiner, mover, lever process.
Let's break that down mechanically. What does that process actually govern?
It governs the entire life cycle of access. How does a new employee automatically get the permissions they need? That's the joiner.
Okay.
How does their access dynamically change when they get promoted or switch departments? The mover. And crucially, how is every single point of access instantly revoked the moment they leave the company? The lever.
I see.
You implement the principle of least privilege access, meaning individuals only hold the permissions absolutely necessary for their specific daily tasks and nothing more. And multi-factor authentication, or MFA, is mandatory across the board.
What about the migration itself, though? I'd imagine you have third-party vendors, specialized IT contractors, internal staff all needing elevated, temporary permissions just to move the massive amounts of data across the wire.
That is a highly targeted vulnerability window. If those temporary migration accounts are not managed strictly, they become permanent backdoors.
That sounds dangerous.
Extremely. Mechanically, every temporary account must have a named human owner responsible for it, and it must have a hard-coded, non-negotiable expiration date built right into the directory.
Because people will forget to delete them.
Exactly. If you don't automate the deletion of those accounts, they will be forgotten. This is where frameworks like the CISA Secure Our World guidance become invaluable.
Right. That CISA guidance provides the baseline practices for account protection and software updates. It's a good reminder that cybersecurity isn't a checklist you run through at the end of the project, right before launch. It has to be baked into the foundational architecture. You are installing the security system in the new house while you build it, not after you've moved all your valuables inside.
It's the only way to operate safely. But, you know, even with perfect security and robust networks, technology is still technology. It fails. Things go off script.
Yeah.
And that necessitates safety nets, which fundamentally rely on understanding your RTO and RPO.
Let's translate those acronyms, but keep it grounded in business impact. RTO is recovery time objective. I always think of this as the stopwatch.
That's a great visual.
It asks, how long can this specific business process be down before the financial or reputational damage becomes unacceptable?
Yeah.
Is it 4 hours? A full day? 10 minutes?
Exactly.
And RPO is recovery point objective. I think of this as the time machine. How far back in time can we afford to go? Meaning, how much recent data can the organization afford to lose and recreate from scratch? An hour's worth of transactions.
Right.
A week's worth of emails.
The stopwatch and the time machine are perfect ways to visualize the mechanics. And the most critical piece of this puzzle is that business leaders, not the IT department, must set those targets.
Why is that?
Well, the technical team can build a system to meet any target, but they don't know the financial impact of the customer service portal being offline compared to, say, an internal HR archiving tool.
And because the tighter those targets get, the more expensive the architecture becomes.
Drastically more expensive. If you tell IT to treat every single workload as mission critical with a 10-minute RTO, they will have to build highly complex active server architectures that constantly mirror data in real time.
Which is going to blow the budget.
It will completely bankrupt the project. But treating all systems as low risk exposes the business to catastrophic data loss. You have to align the architecture to the actual business impact.
So mechanically, how do we enforce those targets and prevent downtime during the actual move?
You construct a documented downtime prevention plan. First, you validate that you have restorable backups.
Not just data sitting on a drive.
Right. Backups you have actively tested and proven you can restore within your time limits. Then you implement a strict configuration freeze before the cutover.
A change freeze. That makes perfect mechanical sense. You isolate the variables.
Exactly.
If someone updates a random piece of accounting software the day before the move and the software crashes during the migration, you'll waste hours trying to figure out if the new cloud environment broke it or if that software update was just buggy.
By freezing the environment, you ensure you are moving a known stable entity. And the final safety net is the rollback plan.
Okay, tell me about that.
You mathematically define how long the engineering team is allowed to troubleshoot an unexpected issue during the cutover before they must reverse course and revert back to the old on-premise system. And you explicitly name who holds the authority to make that call.
You know, I've seen executives balk at rollback plans.
Yeah.
They look at it and think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of failure or a sign that the IT team isn't confident. But mechanically, isn't a rollback plan just a pre-authorized circuit breaker?
It is a critical, documented control mechanism. Picture a cutover happening at 2 a.m. on a Sunday. Something unexpected breaks.
Which happens.
Always. Without a rollback plan, you have a room full of exhausted, stressed-out engineers having an improvised, emotional debate about whether they can fix it in the next hour or if they should abandon ship.
That sounds like a nightmare.
A written plan removes the emotion and the guesswork. It states clearly, if we cannot resolve X by 4 a.m., we execute Y to revert the systems. It guarantees that when employees log in on Monday morning, they will have a working system, even if it's the old one. It provides ultimate peace of mind.
With those safety nets in place, the stage is set for the actual execution, the testing phase before flipping the switch to production.
Yes.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I look at this like a theater dress rehearsal. Mm-hmm. You can't just have the technical crew turn on the stage lights, see that they work, and declare the play ready for an audience. You need the actors on stage, in full costume, running their actual lines and hitting their marks to see if they bump into the scenery.
A lot of migrations fail right at this step because the testing is way too shallow. An IT engineer pinging a server and saying, yes, the app opens, does not mean the system works for the business.
Right.
You need representative users, your actors, performing their actual daily role-based workflows in the new cloud test environment. They need to validate user sign-in. They need to ensure complex integrations run smoothly.
Like, does the automated email flow trigger properly?
Exactly. Can they print invoices? Does remote access hold up under load? That is the only way to uncover missing permissions or broken processes before they impact revenue.
And what about the data itself? How do we mechanically guarantee that millions of files and database records traveled across the digital highway without getting corrupted?
This is where rigorous data validation mechanisms come in. Teams don't just guess, they use checksums.
Checksums are fascinating. For anyone unfamiliar, it's essentially a digital fingerprint. A mathematical algorithm runs on a file before it leaves your office, generating a unique string of letters and numbers. When the file arrives in the cloud, the algorithm runs again. If the fingerprint matches exactly, the file is perfectly intact. If even a single period was altered during transit, the fingerprint changes, and you know the data is corrupted.
Exactly. Checksums, combined with comparing total record counts and running sample financial transactions, ensure data integrity. And during this testing and validation window, you must maintain a single source of truth.
Meaning you restrict late changes in the old environment.
Yes. If users are accidentally updating the old local database while others are testing the new cloud database, you create conflicting records that are mathematically impossible to untangle later.
You also have to ensure your external partners are ready for this dress rehearsal. Vendor readiness is a huge blind spot.
Oh, massive.
It is a nightmare to get to cutover weekend, successfully move the data, and then discover that your core software vendor requires a manual 3-day approval process to authorize a change in hosting IP addresses.
You must integrate vendors into the roadmap early. You confirm all service level agreements in the new environment, and you document explicitly who owns the platform, who owns the network connectivity, and who owns the backups.
So there's no confusion.
Right. If a system goes down post-migration, you cannot afford to have 3 different vendors pointing fingers at each other while your operations are stalled.
Which naturally leads us to the final piece of the puzzle, the human element and post-migration governance. Because a technical success, where every byte moves perfectly, is still a complete business failure if your users don't know how to log in, or if your new cloud costs suddenly triple the week after launch.
The transition relies heavily on a structured communication runbook. Users need step-by-step instructions delivered well before the cutover.
So they aren't surprised on Monday morning.
Exactly. They need to understand the new multi-factor authentication sign-in process, and they need to know exactly who to call if something behaves differently. Your IT support coverage should be heavily overstaffed for the first few days after launch to handle the inevitable user error tickets quickly, preventing frustration from building.
Let's dig into the financial mechanics. Cost management. The cloud is marketed as highly efficient, but there are hidden costs that catch leaders off guard if they aren't governing the new environment properly.
Data transfer fees, commonly called egress fees, can surprise organizations if they haven't architected their systems to minimize data leaving the cloud. But the most significant cost during a migration is the necessity of running overlapping systems.
I hear a lot of complaints about that. It feels like you are paying double rent.
It really does.
You're paying for the new cloud environment, but you're still paying to power and maintain the old servers in your office during the transition. Is it really worth that financial hit?
It is the most valuable insurance policy you will ever buy. While short-term costs do temporarily spike, this controlled overlapping transition is the mechanism that drastically reduces the risk of business stopping downtime.
So it's about mitigating risk.
Completely. If you rip the old system out too quickly just to save a month's worth of server costs, and the new cloud environment encounters a scaling issue, you have no fallback. You are stuck.
Wow, yeah.
Removing capacity too quickly undermines both performance and your ability to recover. The rule is always achieve operational stability first and optimize costs second.
You manage that stabilization through phased governance, giving stakeholders structured, regular review points rather than just hoping for the best.
After each specific workload moves, the project pauses. Leadership and IT review the performance metrics, the initial costs, and any unresolved user friction. They ensure the documentation is updated to reflect the new reality.
Continuous visibility.
Yes. This phase governance gives leadership continuous visibility and the power to course correct, ensuring that schedule pressure never overrides the safety nets.
And a migration project isn't truly complete until you have the final deliverables handed over to the operations team. You need the updated network diagram showing how everything connects now.
Critical.
You need the finalized access records, the tested backup procedures, and the new vendor contact matrix. Those documents are the manual that allows the business to actually operate confidently and independently in this new environment once the specialized migration team steps back.
The ultimate goal of the migration isn't just to change where the servers live. It is to establish resilient, sustainable independence and continuity for the business.
So, to synthesize this roadmap for our Orange County and Southern California leaders listening right now, executing a cloud migration without business downtime isn't magic, and it doesn't have to be a source of anxiety.
Not at all.
It requires disciplined sequencing. You have to map those hidden dependencies, enforce security baselines like MFA from day one, match your architecture to your business's true downtime tolerance, test with real user workflows, and rely on rock-solid pre-authorized rollback options.
But that level of discipline is really difficult to achieve internally when your team is already busy running daily operations. This is why a partner like Technigian is so valuable.
Right.
Founded in 2000 by Ravi Jain, Technigian has spent over two decades supporting Southern California businesses with comprehensive managed IT and cybersecurity. They don't just come in and flip a switch.
They do the heavy lifting.
They assess your specific environment, run the tools to document those hidden network dependencies, plan the phase sequences, and critically, they handle the post-migration operations so you are fully supported after the move.
It's the difference between wandering into the woods alone and having an expert guide who knows every hazard on the trail. As a tangible next step, you should head over to Technigian's website to read the full guide this audio overview is based on.
Absolutely.
And while you are there, reach out to them for a migration planning conversation. You can discuss the unique constraints of your environment, your specific business priorities, and how to safely architect your move to the cloud.
Having that architectural conversation early, long before you start packing those digital boxes, is the best investment you can make in the project's success.
I completely agree. And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, one that goes beyond RTOs and network latency. We've spent this time discussing the technical mechanics and the business benefits of operating in the cloud. But think about the rigorous preparation process we just outlined.
It's intense.
It is. If a cloud migration forces your company to finally shine a light into the dark corners of your network, to inventory every single digital asset, to rigorously define every user role, and to map every hidden dependency that has quietly propped up your daily operations, could the migration process itself inadvertently be the most valuable, clarifying business audit your organization ever conducts, regardless of the cloud benefits waiting at the finish line?
That perspective challenges leaders to see the transition not as an IT burden, but as a rare opportunity to truly understand how their own business functions at a mechanical level.
Something to think about as you plan your next move.
Mm-hmm.
Till next time.